Mini episode 110 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by The Sports Train, the finest pure sports talk show on both terrestrial and internet radio. Follow them on the web at thesportstrain.net.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Okay, everyone. It is mini episode 110 of the FDH Lounge. Rick Morris and Ron Glasnap coming at you today talking Major League Baseball 2012 here for a season preview, a partial reunion of the old Reality Check show, which was really one of the precursors to the FDH Lounge back in the day. So good to sit down with our good friend Ron one more time and pick his brain about MLB, one of his great passions here. Ron, good to have you in, my friend.
Thank you, sir.
And we're going to look at the whole picture here, American League, National League, and some of the big overarching storylines as we see them coming into this season, what we expect to see later in the season, and how things could manifest themselves. I guess the outset would probably be a good time to get this out of the way. Have you seen anything, as we're sitting here a week into the season, anything that yet kind of shakes any impressions you have about how things were going to go during the season? Like, oh, news, I can't go with the Boston Red Sox, or conversely, hey, the Mets are amazing again, and they're going to win the pennant. Anything like that?
I would never look at win-loss records in week one.
Mm-hmm.
But I would look at something, say, Boston, not because they're winning and losing,
mm-hmm.
but you also have the injury factor, which is always big. You have no closer there for probably the first half of the season at least. And you have a bunch of older players who are used to doing things one way for a long time. And then suddenly Bobby Valentine, who has a completely different opinion, coming in and trying to do things his way. Older players don't like change. And I could see some people, maybe not outwardly, they're going to rebel against, well, maybe we should do this or maybe we should do that. There were stories about them not wanting to do calisthenics in spring training, or, you know, doing this drill or that drill. I wonder how the veterans in Boston are going to get along with a Bobby Valentine, who is a strong personality, I think, to say the least.
Yeah. Oh, he really is. I think there's no question about that. And it's a situation, and for what it's worth, they were my pick to just barely miss the playoffs. I had the Tampa Bay as the wild card. So shades of last year with those two teams coming out of that division. So that was my sense coming in. It's interesting because as you're already hearing some of this talk about where the Red Sox are at this point and what are things, how are things likely to kind of devolve, here some talk about, well, maybe you need to break up the team, the culture of the team. But the thing is, Ron, I mean, as you well know, obviously, I'm not telling you anything you don't know, in baseball, in particular, if you're a big market team with the contracts the way that they are, mm-hmm. how are you going to offload these guys? I don't know that you could even necessarily find takers unless you're willing to have other teams really pick up a lot of the salary at this point. Certainly nobody in Boston is going to sit through a full-blown rebuild at this point. So the nucleus is something I don't think they could break up if they wanted to.
No, you can't read in markets. You have to artificially
mm-hmm.
reload,
mm-hmm.
and that's why they're always going for free agents. If you want to dump someone, you're going to have to dump them to a smaller team and probably pay half to 75% of their salary. I'm sure that's why Bobby Abreu is not a Cleveland Indian. He makes $9 million out in Los Angeles. The Angels were not about to pick up all of, or maybe, I don't know, $7 million, whatever it was of his salary to let him go to Cleveland. Said, we're not going to do that. Let him sit on our bench. We're paying him already anyway. What's the difference?
Right.
And that's what you're going to have to do to dump people if you want.
You just referenced the Angels there, and that's the thing. And looking at the American League, I mean, my sense coming into this year is probably the same as a lot of people out there, that you've got now the five playoff spots in both leagues, the three division winners and the two wild cards. But specifically in the American League, well, the National League, obviously, I think it's more wide open, but in the American League, do you subscribe to the theory that, again, you got six teams there? You got Detroit, which is fortunate of those teams to be in the Central, and then Texas and the Angels, New York, Boston, and then Tampa, who's not a big market team but has just an endless farm system. Do you subscribe to the notion that not just even for this year, but for the foreseeable future, unless something really happens to change that dynamic, you're looking at more or less those six teams fighting for those five spots?
I would think so, but there's always a surprise team. Now, an Oakland A's to step up, or there's suddenly, you know, the Toronto Blue Jays start kicking people's butt.
Now, they
problem
could,
is,
yeah.
Is Toronto has Tampa, New York, and Boston to fight over
mm-hmm.
To try and get through them, so that's a little tougher. I'm kind of amazed, since we're both, you know, sharing near the same year in our birth certificates here,
mm-hmm.
that the National League I always thought was a little bit better than the American League, always, because the American League was more closer to softball.
Yeah.
Because you had the DH, because you know, pitchers didn't have to hit, play as good at defense, that sort of thing. American League is just hands down the best league right now.
Mm-hmm.
You got guys like Albert Pujols and Prince Fielder, I almost said Cecil Fielder, going to American League, but you don't have them going the other way.
Right.
And we've seen guys go from National to American League, Adam Dunn, who can't get used to it, don't know how to do it. But a lot of them, you go to the American League, you suddenly, they go crazy. And some of these teams, I mean, the six we mentioned, are just loaded.
Mm-hmm.
And none of them have to fight like a National League team. And even the big markets in the National League. I mean, you got Chicago, you got Philadelphia, you got New York, you got Los Angeles. They didn't really pull in any big free agents this year.
No.
They really didn't. And they all the big names seem to go to the American League.
They do. They really do. And that's an excellent point. And as far as that goes, I mean, what you just said kind of reminds me of something from a few years back, or a few weeks back. Was on a show. Shout out to our friends at the Sports Train, 1580 down in Fort Myers. Good friend Jeff Briscoe, who will smile as he's hearing this. But I was on there talking fantasy with. We were talking about what you were talking about with the first baseman and everything. And they were asking some of the effects. And I know there's too many people, but this is a good indicator of what we're talking about here. If you're in a National League only league, it's pretty much Joey Votto or bust at first base right now. That shows you right now the balance between the leagues. If you want mm-hmm. to get a franchise first baseman in National League Fantasy Baseball, if you don't go for Joey Votto, you are rolling the dice to some extent on somebody else versus the absolute riches you're talking about in the American League. So even though that's fantasy, it also illuminates what you're talking about in the actual game.
Yeah, with Ryan Howard out until, let's be conservative and say mid-June,
mm-hmm.
July 1st, something like that. I mean, you're looking at guys like Freddie Freeman and Ike Davis and Brian LaHare and, you know, who are these other guys that are playing first base, Matt Gamble, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You're right. It's Joey Votto or it's pretty much nobody. And the Reds bring up a great point in what they've done in the last couple of days. You signed Votto and Brandon Phillips to basically $300 million.
Mm-hmm.
Small market. How do they do that? Goes back to one of the things, one of the rules that I've always known in my life that I've never seen beaten. Winning cures everything.
Mm-hmm.
You have bad press, you have people sign, you whatever. Winning cures everything. Fans come out, TV ratings go up, coverage is better, national games come in, people want you for endorsements, whatever else. Look at the teams that are perennially awful.
Mm-hmm.
They don't win. Nothing goes right when you don't win. And I'm amazed at how many teams, maybe not do Moneyball, but figure out another way to do things because you just can't go 25 years between good seasons or a good run.
Yeah.
You know, when's the last time Kansas City had a good run? I understand. Extraordinarily small market.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have to get it done in draft or trades.
Yep.
Are they getting it done in the draft or in trade?
They appear to be.
They appear to be, mm-hmm. but we all know what good teams are on paper.
Yeah.
They're great teams on paper, but, you know, paper doesn't win games. We all know that. I mean, Texas has finally kind of figured it out. Oakland's doing the same thing. You know, Moneyball may need a little revamp
mm-hmm.
because they may be competing, but competing and winning are two different things. Winning cures all. It really does. Why do you think the Cubs aren't going anywhere?
Yeah, well, in terms of building and sustaining a winner, you mentioned about Texas. It's interesting, and I'd mentioned to you off air that I wanted to bring this up and leverage some of what you know in your capacity in your day job over in the front office at Fox Sports Ohio. Without getting into any kind of speculation that would be reckless for you to make, let's talk about the Reds here for a second, because one of the things that I wanted to ask you about was TV markets and things of this nature. Cincinnati is never going to be a really big TV market, but to the extent that you can speculate without getting in trouble with anybody on something like this, is it a thing where you could see the pie kind of growing a bit if they get to be a winner? I mean, that's what happened with the Indians in the 90s when you were working there and covering the Indians and everything. Is it a matter where if the Reds are perennial strong contenders in the NL Central, that there would probably be more TV money rolling in because you guys would be making more? Is it realistic to expect the pie to grow, in other words, in a medium to smaller market like Cincinnati?
The money will grow just because of economies.
Okay.
It really will.
Okay.
But the real key is the fandom and how much do they want to pay attention.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't teams work, or why haven't they really worked in Tampa or Miami?
Mm-hmm.
Because nobody's from there.
Mm-hmm.
They don't seem to care as much. People in Tampa and Miami aren't from there. They're from New York. They're from Chicago. They're from Nashville. They're from wherever. And they go down to Florida to retire or to get away from it all or whatever. And they have other teams to root for.
Mm-hmm.
Cincinnati, I remember watching it last week. They had their opening day parade. I don't know of another city in America that has an opening day parade. There were 400,000 people at a Cincinnati Reds opening day parade
mm-hmm.
before the opening day game. They love their baseball in Cincinnati. They always have. When I was in college there, and they won the World Series in 1990, they were carried by the over-the-air broadcaster, Channel 5, home of Jerry Springer.
Okay.
And were getting ratings in the 20s,
mm-hmm.
which is unheard of. But they would push NBC programming off TV to put the Reds on.
Wow.
In the summer. Now, 1990 also happened to work because they went out and won the World Series.
Yeah.
But the Reds fans, and there are other cities like this that are, you know, Boston is one of them. Now, they happen to be a big market,
mm-hmm.
but where your fans are beyond passionate, things will always work there in some extent. You have to take that fandom and then figure out how to turn it into a good team.
Yeah. And I agree with what you said, you know, about winning, you know, providing the cure for a lot of these types of things. In an example a little bit closer to what I was thinking about before we branched off on this Cincinnati thing here, another team near and dear to your heart because of where you spent a large part of your childhood, the Philadelphia Phillies, they to me sort of exemplify this idea that when you look at Philly, it's really laughable to me that they were ever considered, say, a mid-market team. It's kind of the same way that some people have looked at the White Sox over time. Like, I know they're the secondary team, but it's still Chicago. Mm-hmm. Same thing with Philly. Philly's not a small market by any measure. But it took winning to really kind of maximize that, to tap into being a larger market. I think you're also seeing that in some other places. San Francisco, the Bay Area is gargantuan,
mm-hmm.
and Oakland doesn't provide a lot of competition across the Bay these days.
Mm-hmm.
And you're seeing it, I think, in the Metroplex with Texas here. And I don't remember if they've signed their very rich deal or if they're about to, if they're still in the negotiation phase, but I don't remember where that's at. But Texas is going to be able to be sustained at the point that they're at payroll-wise, revenue-wise, et cetera, because of maximizing the whole Metroplex kind of a thing. The Angels are clearly counting on that being the case with Albert Pujols. So what's your thoughts on that, of teams being able to combine winning and TV to really capture the true potential of their market size?
You really need to hit it at the right time between talent, TV, hopefully a couple of key free agents and that sort of thing. If you asked, I think, the average baseball fan, not one of us crazy people, but Phillies have been around there, as they are, as you said, one of my teams, been around since the late 1800s.
Mm-hmm.
So 130 plus years. How many world titles have they won?
I believe now it's two, right?
Two.
Yeah.
So they're actually not that much better than the Cubs.
Yeah.
But what they figured out is once we got the chance to be good, then we'll go and we're really push it. For being a number four, number five market in the country,
mm-hmm.
they did not go out and spend big in the 90s after the 93 run between, say, 96 and 2005, 2006.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't go spend big money. They had their run in the 80s up to about 83, 84. Well, from 84 until the early 90s, they were awful.
Mm-hmm.
they did not go out and spend gargantuan crazy money like a Yankees do or the Red Sox or whatever. So they kind of figure out it's not justified, it's not smart money spending. Sometimes it was just being cheap.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they just didn't want to go out and do it.
Right.
Personally, I think some of that may be in San Francisco as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're, again, top 10 market in the country.
Right.
And yet, yes, you got Barry Bonds back in the day, but San Francisco doesn't sign a lot of free agents.
Mm-hmm.
They really don't. You know, so TV money certainly helps, but it is not the way to do things. It's not going to get you everything.
Well, it's interesting. We talked about it in the case of the American League and the way that it seems to be stratified in a lot of ways because of market size, TV money, not least of which I'm not going to forget willingness of ownership to spend, which is probably about as close as I'm going to come to my Larry Dolan rant for today. But in the National
League... Come on, we got another hour to spend.
Well,
I'm
yeah,
sure
it's bound to come up at some point. I need it for the therapy. But in the National League, it's interesting because it's a little more wide open as of right now because... You talked about that with the Florida teams and not having the support and everything like that. The Miami Marlins, say what you will about them otherwise, and there's a lot to say, particularly with everything going on with Ozzie Guillen. Funny to see how they're shocked that Ozzie could act like an a-hole. I don't know where that whole thing comes from, but
because he's never run off at the mouth before.
Yeah. That kind of bemuses, I think, those of us who've seen his act a couple of years a little bit up close like we have in
just
an American League Central
tangent,
City.
Just a quick tangent. I told this story at lunch a couple of days ago in the office. The only guy to ever steal my equipment when I would cover the opposition in the locker room was Ozzie Guillen. Literally took my tape recorder and microphone while in the White Sox locker room back in whatever it was, the mid-90s, and was running around the locker room doing whatever, cursing all kinds of crazy Spanish words and whatever else into my tape recorder. What are you supposed to do at that point? You know, at the time, I'm probably 25. I am not an athlete in terms of, you know, these guys don't respect me in a locker room. They're the White Sox. They don't know who I am. What do? You yell at a professional athlete, give me back my equipment? Do you chase after him? What do you do? Luckily, Ozzie got bored in about 10 seconds, and all right, yeah, here's your stuff back. But it was only one who ever actually stole my equipment.
Shout out to a mutual friend of ours, a man who has spent countless hours doing such taping in locker rooms. I can only imagine the look on the face of Jeff Sack as that was happening.
I don't think Jeff was here at that time.
Okay.
But had he been here, I think he would have gone taekwondo all over somebody. Probably the PR guy who would say, go chase him down or I am going to take care of this myself.
Yeah.
And cause an international incident.
Yeah. Yeah. So. Jeff was a pro. I don't see him wanting to stand still for somebody pushing around a young guy like that. But that is a funny story. But yeah, it was just about as I was trying to give Miami credit for, again, at least they're spending. They're trying to step up into this new park right now. Washington kind of doing the same, but that's what's interesting. In the National League, you get the sense that these are more fragile things. You look in the American League, okay, Angels and Texas in the West. That looks like for the next decade, they're going to be the two big boys. They're going to be there. Miami, Washington, they're kind of new to this point. We don't know if they're going to be there. St. Louis has always been just a little bit shy of the tippy-top tier in terms of spending money.
But great baseball market, and you know you're going to get good TV ratings, you're going to get the endorsements, you're going to get the fans into it, and what happens? They go out and win a World Series every so often, even when you don't expect it.
Right. But I have to ask you this, because there are a fair number of members of our crew here in the New York area, a couple of folks in the New York media in various capacities who've come on board with us as quasi-regulars. And I just have to laugh when I'm talking to them or reading some of their columns or whatever, because there's this expectation that because the Mets are in New York, they can, and I know what kind of a first week they've had, but how can the Mets be bottom feeders? How can the Mets be... I mean, never mind that this is maybe the best division in baseball, maybe one of the best divisions in all of sports right now, but this notion that we're New York, and particularly in a game right now where in like Major League Baseball where money does matter to such an extent, how can we be at this point? And if they're saying that, certainly that's what the fans who are reading and listening to these guys are also saying. It's one of those things, it's hard to kind of get through to anybody on the subject in terms of look, you are where you are. Your farm system has been pretty putrid over the last decade or so. The places you've spent money haven't worked out real well. Johan Santana, you know, you missed some of the best years of his career on his arm. So I think it's hard for teams in bigger markets like that, particularly ones that have spent money to a certain extent, to understand how it can go sour. But you and I know that it can.
Yeah, they never want to admit failure.
Right.
They never want to. And if they do fail, okay, well, how can we buy our way out of it?
Mm-hmm.
And no one, you know, we forget. There was a time, actually, when the Yankees stunk.
Right.
You know, I think it was like 66, 67 until the mid-70s. They were awful.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. CBS, George Steinbrenner buy them. Suddenly that's not acceptable anymore. And they get the giant bravado. And it works for them because they haven't stunk, as far as I remember, for very long between, what, the Big Red Machine in 75 and 76 when they played them in a World Series for 76. From 76 until today, how do you not consider the New York Yankees a contender every year? And yet the Mets go 6, 7, 8 years sometimes and are just awful.
Yeah, but also when you look at the present landscape of Major League Baseball, one of the cautionary tales for teams, and I would say that it probably exemplifies the Mets over the last year, two, or three, I always go back to the Yankees in the 80s, back when we were growing up. And this whole thing, oh, this is going to be the year. We can't go wrong. We just signed Steve Kemp to a fat free agent contract. They were throwing money around in the 80s, and half these guys ended up being busts. And some of them came in and produced, but there was a complete lack of chemistry in the clubhouse.
Mm-hmm.
That was one of the greatest examples of money being counterproductive in the recent history of sports. Ironically, the New York Rangers right before the lockout are probably the next best example of that, that the Rangers were actually a better team after the lockout when they had to get rid of all the overpaid guys. But the Yankees in the 80s, that's a cautionary tale for some of these teams here today.
Mm-hmm.
You still can stink even if you're spending a lot of money, if you're spending it in bad places.
Absolutely, and what the Yankees never did, and in the 80s they didn't win anything.
Mm-hmm.
They were in the World Series in 81, but they never tore it down to the studs.
Mm-hmm.
If you were rebuilding a house, they didn't go all the way to the studs. They might have gone to the drywall. They may have taken the wallpaper off and whatever else. But they always had their what they thought was their foundation of Don Mattingly and you know, Guidry early in the 80s and those kind of guys that they could fill in. And, well, let's go get a Steve Sachs.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go get Steve Kemp. Let's go get this guy and that guy. And they would finish in the mid-whatever between, you know, back when Toronto was in their runs and back in the East in that day, you had Detroit back in the day and that sort of thing. You know, nobody in the big markets wants to ever rip it down.
Right.
And the way they can go out, what they figured out is you go get a free agent, but you still have to draft well. You still have to make some decent trades. You can't do it all one way.
That's true.
You just cannot. And I don't actually care what sport it is. You know, as we sit here and you're in your Red Wings jersey and I mocked you as I walked up because I thought hockey season was over because I want to see what the Blue Jackets do, you know.
With the second pick.
Well, with the second pick, you know, every team has to do things different ways. And if it's not working, sometimes you might have to go, what else can I do?
Mm-hmm.
You know, Seattle's another one that might have to find another way to do it. Oakland might be another way to have to do it. Florida, for what they've done, or Miami in this case. But, you know, we'll go win a World Series in 97. But then we're going to go trade everybody, and we're going to stink out loud in 98 and 99.
Right.
That's the way they've chose to do it is we'll spend big when we need to, but we're not going to spend big every year.
Yeah.
And remember, Miami's a top 10 market.
They are. No, and you're right. That's another one where they should be playing a little bit bigger than they are market-wide, market-wise. When you were going down your list of names there, the one name that you didn't mention for the Yankees was in the 80s was Ed Whitson. We later found out what Ed Whitson means in Spanish. It means Javier Vazquez in Spanish.
Thank you. So, ba-dum-bum.
Yes, thank you. But, no, it's interesting what you're saying, and we're talking a fair amount of big picture stuff here, but I think that this is – pretty germane to what we're going to be seeing this year in Major League Baseball. So I want to take another look at what you said there. You mentioned Seattle, for example. And, you know, I would say 10, 15, 18 years ago, for some of these teams, it would become a matter of, well, what can we do as a means of trying to improve our overall situation? Oh, I know. We'll go get a new ballpark. The
Absolutely.
Thing that's been really interesting after the last couple of years,
it's
Ron,
a cure-all.
It's almost all tapped out.
I
mean, how many teams left conceivably. Tampa, they've been toying with it the last couple of years. I mean, I think you can count on one hand in Major League Baseball the number of teams that still have that available. And we have seen that strategy fail for teams like the Pittsburgh Pirates, who thought they were going to use it as a catapult and found out otherwise the hard way.
Yeah, you know, Tampa might be in line for a new stadium, maybe. I mean, just as I'm looking down a list, Kauffman Stadium in Kansas City may be old, but I'm told it's still one of the best stadiums in baseball.
Yeah, they've renovated it.
That's not going anywhere.
Oaktown wants to go to San Jose, but who knows if that'll happen.
Yeah, I mean, but, you know, we'll see what happens. But, I mean, you look in the list, almost everybody else has a new stadium within the last 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
So that instant revenue, that I just want to go stand at the gates and look in and whatever else, you know, we don't think of it because we're here in Northeast Ohio and we see it all the time. Mm-hmm. Jacobs Field is 18 years old.
It is.
It's hard to imagine that, because I was there game one in 1994 when they opened up, and it was, holy smokes, 18 years ago that thing opened. It's hard to believe.
Well, and here's the interesting thing about that. Let's go to that for just a second here. So they've got, I think, about 12 years. That's a 30-year lease, right? They got like 12 years left on it.
Probably something to that effect.
Well, I'll tell you what. The only thing working in the favor, I think, of Indians fans and looking at that, because I personally, and I've been a big pessimist ever since the Dolans took over the team.
No.
I don't.
You're kidding.
But I go back to the old reality check.
That's why
check
your face
days.
Is on the dartboard in Mark Shapiro's office.
You laugh, but I've heard that. I mean, and I think, by the way, for all of my ego, that my profile should be sufficiently low enough that nobody there would have heard of me. I've been told by one or two people, that at least a handful of people there, have MF'd me, which just, seriously, it just makes me laugh. I'm like, how do they even have
heard of me? How do they even know who you are?
Yeah, it just kind of makes me laugh. I don't really tailor, especially these days, I don't really tailor a lot of stuff to Cleveland sports. But let's talk about that for an example, because this is another big picture thing. I personally, and by the way, I've been proven right in my pessimism in the decade that they've owned the team, but that's neither here nor there. But it's a matter of, I don't think it's too soon to sweat the 12 years being up. I don't, because the next couple of years anyways don't look to be much different, theoretically at least, than the last decade has been. So you're going to be coming up on that deadline. For teams like the Indians, for fan bases like that, one of the best things that they got going for them is the fact that there don't seem to be a lot of viable alternatives out there. Once in a blue moon, you'll hear talk about Charlotte or Portland or somebody.
New Orleans. Vegas.
I don't think
anybody else is going to go to Canada.
Yeah, but Buffalo's not a big market either. So
no.
It's a thing where that's the only saving grace for fans of teams like that necessarily, because I do not doubt that in another 8 or 9 years that the Dolans will be trying to use that as some type of extortion racket to get some, maybe, God forbid, maybe another park. And I think it's going to be an empty threat because of the market size and other things like that, the lack of other viable alternatives. Unless, you know, I mean, if we get like supersonic transportation to Europe, then all bets are off. But, you know, even then, I don't see flights to like Milan, Italy becoming too much.
No, but you could see them to Mexico City.
Yeah.
You could see them to San Juan, Puerto Rico.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, something like that is possible. I'm not saying that the Indians would do that. I don't think they would. Mm-hmm. I don't even... As you know, your pessimism drips off and infects everyone else. I still don't believe that anybody down at Ontario and Carnegie would do that. The Indians' problem, and I'm sure that they would note it,
mm-hmm.
Begrudgingly, but they would note it, is their drafts have stunk.
Right.
Their drafting in the last 15 years has been awful.
Yep.
If you look at some of the better teams around baseball, they supplement free agents with high picks.
Mm-hmm.
You look in Philadelphia was a good one. Ryan Howard, their own pick. Chase Utley, their own pick. Jimmy Rollins, their own pick.
Mm-hmm.
And then, okay, and they've had a horrible hole at third base for a long time, probably since Scott Rolen left.
They've been able to put the functional equivalent of Rick Morris at third base and still have the best infield in baseball most of the time because
right.
of the other three guys.
But
didn't Victorino come through the system too?
Victorino came
Cole
through.
Hamels.
Cole Hamels. You get those kind of guys. Those are your core guys. Go mm-hmm. look at the Yankees back in the day. You know, you had Marion Rivera, your own guy. Derek Jeter, your own guy. All those. Bernie Williams, your own guy. And then you get the right pieces to go with it. Back, Tino Martinez, Paul O'Neill, Jorge Posada, their own guy.
Mm-hmm.
Those kind of things. You had enough of a core. what the Indians don't have right now. And most markets, when they have these small market teams, the drafting becomes much more important, yet nobody focuses on it because nobody really cares so much about the Major League Baseball draft.
Right.
They have the same problem that hockey has.
Right.
You can be a top pick in hockey, and chances are you're not seeing the NHL next year.
Right. Because, so, yeah, it takes a little while. There's the deferred gratification on that. But as far as, again, back to the National League, where I think we agree it's a little more wide open, who are the teams you feel like are doing a little bit better job of building a team in that kind of way? Because to me, the interesting thing is one of the first teams that comes to mind, yeah, they've been very flashy in the offseason with everything that they've done with Jose Reyes and everybody else. But to me, the Florida Marlins are a pretty good example of that. You've got Gabby Sanchez there. You've got, obviously, Hanley Ramirez, who's been the centerpiece. You have Logan Morrison, if he pans out. Giancarlo, don't call me Mike Stanton. Mm-hmm. You got a number of guys like that have come through. Josh Johnson that have come through the system.
Yeah, don't forget the arms. Annabelle Sanchez. The Josh Johnsons and
Ricky
those
Nolasco.
Kind of guys. And then this year what they've done is they've then supplemented with the Jose Reyes and the Heath Bell and the Mark Burleys to be a contender. I really think the Marlins have a great shot at getting one of those wild cards.
I look at them. I like them and Atlanta, and Atlanta's a team that hasn't really done much supplementing from the outside yet, but you get the sense that they will in the next year or two.
But boy, do they draft well.
Boy, yeah. I mean, they're really, really solid. I've got Miami and Atlanta down for those wild card spots with Washington just missing it. How do you see that division shaking out?
As a homer, I still like the Phillies. I still think they're loaded.
You should.
You know, you got Hamels and Lee and Halliday and Joe Blanton and Vance Worley and those kind of guys.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you signed up a solid closer in Jonathan Papelbon. They got very lucky and didn't get hosed by keeping Ryan Madsen, who went out with Tommy John surgery and is out for the year. Ryan Howard's coming back. I don't know that Chase Utley will ever be a Chase Utley again.
Mm-hmm.
That may never happen. He might be, you know, the bench guy that you might have in the future, albeit a very expensive one.
Yeah.
But he may be that guy. And what the Phillies are going to need, especially for them, is they're going to need to hit.
Yeah.
And right now they're not hitting. And it's not that it's a new subject in Philadelphia. It has been for years of how do you have all these guys and suddenly they can't score more than 3 runs a game, which is why they went out and spent the money on the pitching.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't really need to score more than 3 runs a game when you got Lee and Halliday and Cole Hamels out there throwing the ball every other day.
No, you really shouldn't. But one of the things, too, and it's interesting because they're pitchers that really kind of have nerves of steel, which is a very underrated thing when it comes to an ace. Something that I found to be very interesting in looking at the career of C.C. Sabathia, who you and I saw up close many years here in Cleveland, was that this is a guy who, and I was really kind of surprised when he turned it on in New York in 09 and all through the postseason and did it, because he really had the reputation of not being a good clutch pitcher, and I think it was well-deserved. I went back and I looked at his numbers in 07 when he won the Cy Young Award. It was amazing to me how many times, and this being the Indians, of course they came up offensively deficient a number of times, but still, he's the ace of the team. I mean, if the Indians gave him 2 runs, he would give up 3. If they gave him 1 run, he would give up 2. It is amazing the number of times that happened for him, and that's just the 1 year that I looked at. So that's really what kind of separates him in a lot of ways when you're talking about, you know, a Roy Halladay, a Cliff Lee, guys like that just have the nerves of steel. It's a thing where a lot of times they just have the mentality and they can back it up. If you give me 1 run, that's enough.
There is a huge difference, sometimes a Grand Canyon difference between a number one and an ace.
Yes,
okay?
Yes.
If I say Justin Verlander is an ace, he's an ace no matter where he goes.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter what team he's on and whatever else. Tell me who the ace is in Kansas City.
Who's the opening day starter? Was it Hoshivar?
Yeah, they're going to call somebody a number one and say are their ace. I think Bruce Chen was the opening day starter, who's on his, like, 47th team in baseball.
As I once said about Jake Westbrook, you cannot be considered an ace if your best pitch is the "I hope he hits it right at somebody" pitch.
Yeah, yet you would say someplace like Philadelphia, like the Angels is another one.
Yeah.
They have multiple aces. Only one could be their number one guy on the team, but the guy that can stop a losing streak, that can step up when they really need it, that sort of thing. You know, if you're out in the Angels, you got Jared Weaver, you got C.J. Wilson, even Irvin Santana on some days.
Dan Heron pushing Wilson down to be the three, yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, Wilson's the best three in the league, probably.
The Angels may have the best staff next to the Phillies in baseball, and nobody really knows about them.
Well, spoiler alert, that's my World Series pick. We'll get to that as we're going a little later. That's why I see that, because I think moving through both playoff brackets, they're going to be very difficult to beat because you have to get through those pitching staffs multiple times here. But, yeah, no, I agree with you on everything with Philadelphia, and I think that you have every right to be optimistic about them going forward. What they're trying to do, you talk about this notion of rebuilding, not rebuilding, but retooling on the fly if you're a team at that level, continuing to supplement. They've had a really good farm system. Obviously, it started with the wave of guys you were talking about with Rollins and Utley and Howard, but it's continued going along to some extent. Now Dominic Brown, they're looking to him to be one of the next foundation players in Philly. And they also acquired Hunter Pence. So how do you see that shaping up? Because they're going to be more of an outfield-oriented team, I think, in the next couple of years as opposed to infield.
The good teams also take what they have in the farm system and make that trade for Hunter Pence.
Yep.
And get what they need now, and for lack of a better word, let somebody else worry about the prospects that they're getting.
Mm-hmm.
Houston can sit there and say, we're waiting on Jonathan Singleton. He's going to be a great first baseman. Maybe. When? We all know we're all in deep fantasy leagues that play with minor leaguers and that sort of thing. If half of them hit, you should be jumping for joy.
Right.
So if you make a trade of one great guy for four minor leaguers, chances are two of those guys aren't going to make the major leagues.
Yeah.
I think that's a pretty safe bet. If you looked at the Indians deals that they would make with a Cliff Lee or a Victor Martinez, for every Justin Masterson, you got a who's the guy the Phillies got traded here?
Lou Marson?
No.
Jason Knapp.
Knapp, okay, who has not done anything for the Indians.
Who was an 18-year-old with a suspect arm when they acquired him.
Right. So, you know, for every Carlos Carrasco, you get another player that might be good and might not be good. You know, so when you make those kind of deals, you're hoping to hit on one minor leaguer that turns out to be really good. The good teams get that. You know, matter of fact, if we look in the other teams in the National League, the Reds made a deal like that this year where they picked up Matt Latos.
Yeah.
Or Latos, whatever.
Yeah.
Opposing
batters are Latos intolerant.
Yes. So you traded away like a Yonder Alonso and a bunch of other young guys.
Who didn't have a position anyways there.
Right. Yeah. Grandel was another one as another catcher. They had two stud catchers in their farm system with Grandel and Mesoraco. So they could afford to try and make that deal and supplement that pitching. Mm-hmm. You know, the NL Central, man, talk about throwing sticks in the air and who's going to win that. You know, you like to think you know what you're talking about, but, you know, some team could step up, get on a hot streak. You could easily win, I think, that division with less than 90 wins.
Oh, clearly. Yeah, clearly. I'd be surprised if anybody in that division won. And it's interesting that over time, that for as much as people were writing off St. Louis, and they weren't my pick to win the division, my pick was Cincinnati, and I'm going to stick with them even with the potential upheaval in the bullpen. But you've seen St. Louis edge back towards people's consciousness as time's gone along, as they've done their best to kind of regroup without Albert Pujols. There are even some folks looking at the vulnerabilities of the division thinking that Milwaukee may not be dead and buried, not least of which because, again, they got a 1-2-3 boom, boom, boom that's one of the better ones in the National League with the rotation there. So it's interesting that teams that have flaws that would pretty much rule them out in just about any division in the American League, in the National League Central, it's perfect because you're dealing with other flawed entities.
Yeah, and you can point out the flaws in the NL Central that every team has. Every one of them's got a hole or two in their lineup or in their bullpen or in their rotation. Everybody's got it. In the American League, there are so many teams who look like they don't have one hole anywhere. Not to mention not only not having a hole, but having somebody who can fill two of them by themselves.
Right.
You know, when Detroit goes out and signs a Prince Fielder to go with Miggy Cabrera,
yeah,
I mean, those are two guys that fill four different things and needs.
Right.
And, you know, they make up for all kinds of, okay, well, Detroit's second baseman isn't the greatest in the world.
Mm-hmm.
They're not getting as much out of maybe, say, their corner outfielders. They don't have to waste their time signing Maglio Ordonez and hoping they get something because they got two guys in the corners who are just going to mash the ball.
Well, and when you talk about offsets like that, and that's interesting because I always look at things that way. And then, again, if you happen to have a middle infielder who can really pound the hell out of the ball, then you can afford to maybe go a little bit more slightly high average slappy in one of the traditional power spots because it kind of evens out. I don't say this just because the man is a past Lounge guest, but I have to tell you, I have been a little bit bemused in the last couple of weeks. People, oh, news, the Indians are having to play Shelly Duncan in left field. The Indians have maybe the most slaptastic first base, third base combination that I can remember since at least the 80s, and Casey Kostman and Jack Hanrahan, and we're losing sleep over Shelly Duncan just because the man has a low batting average and has basically been like a Russell Branyan-type player, power hitter when he makes contact, swing and a miss when he doesn't. I have to laugh at something like that because it's. I guess you get a rap for being a journeyman, and that's how people look at it. But how the Indians get a pass for Kochman and Hanrahan at third base, and then but it's a crisis like African famine that you have Shelly Duncan in left field. That doesn't add up to me.
Yeah, I've never really understood that. You know, some of these, and the Indians aren't the only team to fall into this. Some of the other, you know, lower than 500 teams also fall into this.
Mm-hmm.
They have a great bench.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, they're starting.
Yeah. They're all interchangeable.
You know,
yeah.
I'd love to have a guy like Shelly Duncan and Jack Hanrahan and Casey Kochman on my bench as defensive replacements, pinch hitters, and whatever else. But unfortunately, they're starting.
Yeah.
The Indians today are supposedly signing Johnny Damon.
Yeah.
Another guy right now. Love to have on my bench. Not necessarily thrilled to be my starting left fielder at 38 years old. You know, the teams that have the what I call the Pittsburgh Steeler mentality, the Steelers, the Patriots actually do it as well. I think they learned a little bit from Pittsburgh. Is the Steelers get rid of a guy 1 year too early, rather than a year too late.
Yeah,
they'll take the PR hit. They'll take the let's have a problem with getting rid of this guy, and maybe he'll go to another team and be good for a year or two. But very rarely do the Steelers nurse somebody through bad seasons at the end of their career.
Right.
When they're done, they're done. And they get rid of them. They could have left Hines Ward out there next year to kind of do a rocking chair thanks for the memories tour. But they didn't. They said, okay, we saw what we needed to. You're done. That's it. And the baseball teams that go out and try and make that lemonade out of lemons, how often does that really hit?
Right. That's true.
And that's not just we say it because it's the Indians and we're here in Northeast Ohio, but I mean, there are other teams out there who go out and do the same thing, and, well, we hope we get another good year out of this guy or that guy. Or, you know, Minnesota is a good one that they try and – if they get somebody, they're going to try and nurse one good year out of them and supplement them with what is a pretty good farm system in Minnesota.
Right.
But, you know, Morneau and Maurer can't carry a team anymore.
Right.
So what are you going to go add to it? And – well, and then they always throw out the small market thing, and we can't go get a big free agent. As we've said, and you've heard it several times, just spending the money isn't enough.
Right.
You have to do all three things. You have to scout, you have to make trades, and you have to sign the right people at the right time.
You do. All these things are critical elements. But when you're talking about teams that have the capacity to be able to grow in market size, the division we haven't talked about as much in the National League is the West. And I don't know that you're going to see this be the case as much this year, although you did see the San Francisco Giants stepping up, signing Matt Cain. The question still lingering is whether they will do the same with Tim Lincecum. For the Giants,
different story, though, to re-sign your own guys versus signing someone else.
True. And they haven't really stepped up to do so. You're absolutely right. They haven't stepped up to do something like that. They've at least gone, I give them a modicum of credit for going the expensive rental route as they did with Carlos Beltran last year. That was a real kind of roll-the-dice type deal, the likes of which they hadn't made previously that much. But if we're going to see what I think we're going to see over the next couple of years, and like I said, it may or may not happen this year in the NL West, it would be a matter of San Francisco stepping up as they continue to consolidate being a winning team, continuing to consolidate all the advantages of their market size, and it would be the Dodgers basically regaining where they were. Because under Frank McCourt the last couple of years, dude was spending all the money on his divorce case, didn't have it to spend on the team. This billion-dollar conglomerate that Magic Johnson is hooked up with, it's the owners of the team, notwithstanding him being the front man. I see a dynamic with the Dodgers and the Giants the next couple of years. I think it's going to be very similar to what we're already seeing with the Angels and with the Rangers in the American League West, because I think it's going to be a situation of neither franchise, especially given their historic rivalry going back many, many decades, their Angels and Rangers don't have that. Yeah, but this historic hatred between the two, and hatred, you might say, Rick, is that too strong of a term?
I don't know. Fan who got beat up outside the Dodger Stadium.
Thank you. Just about to say, when a dude's getting bashed in the head for wearing the wrong jersey, I don't think it is too strong. You and I were thinking the same thing there.
That scares me.
Yeah, that should scare all of us. But it's a thing where if the Angels and the Rangers can build up this kind of competition between them, doesn't it seem inevitable that the same kind of arms race happens with the Dodgers and the Giants?
Oh, I think so. And, you know, don't forget, next year, Houston goes to the American League.
Yeah.
You're down to 15-15, mm-hmm. which also helps some of these other teams. And, you know, there's going to be an interleague every day. You're going to be playing different teams and that sort of thing. That's going to help out the NL West. Sometimes they can beat up on each other. But I'll tell you what, in that division, mm-hmm. I think more than any other in baseball, those guys have built their teams around their ballpark.
Yep.
And the one who hasn't, which I've never understood, is Colorado.
Yeah.
Get guys who are sinker slider guys, who throw ground balls, that don't throw fly balls, and that's who your pitcher should be in Colorado, mm-hmm. and you should be much better. But I think Arizona, San Diego, whether they're good or whether they're not, they realize this is the stadium I have, this is the weather that I have, this is how we're going to build our team. They have a philosophy, and that's what they're going to go out and do. San Francisco does the same thing. You get great pitching. Pac Bell is, I'd say, a fair ballpark. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not a convocation center. It's not monstrous
right.
like San Diego or something. But you got to have solid pitching in San Francisco. Where do they spend their money? Lincecum, Kane. They get picks like Madison Baumgartner and those kind of guys. They get a solid closer, albeit whatever weird side Brian Wilson might be on mm-hmm. that day. You know, you get the arms and, you know, live with that. The Dodgers have gone the other way. You know, you have to have stud outfielders in Los Angeles, in Dodger Stadium, and they
right.
do. Matt Kemp may be the most underrated player in baseball, which is ironic since he's in the second biggest market in America.
You know what? And I want to get back to that. You raised a very interesting point. I want to get back to that in a second, but I want to first ask you a follow-up about San Diego, because I look at that, and yet they're tailoring the team to their park, and yet they should, because if they were trying to build a squad of bombers, then they would win about 40 games because it would all be warning track power, and their pitching would suck.
Same would go in Seattle. You can't hit out in Seattle.
Right.
So you don't get a bunch of bombers in Seattle out at Safeco. It just doesn't
right.
work.
But here's my question to you. While the Padres do have, as you would expect, decent home road splits with the hitters in their lineup the last couple of years has still not been imposing even on the road, and that's been one of the things that's been holding them back. Is it because they're still at the point of doing it on the cheap, and you're just not going to have the developed kind of skills in the lineup to be able to do that? Or is it a flaw in their theory? I mean, why is their offense, even on the road, really not at a level that lets them be competitive?
I think they've gone along with some of the other teams. I don't know how good their draft picks have been over the last few years.
Decent. Hit or miss, I think.
Yeah. But very hit or miss.
Yeah.
I don't think many of their trades have really worked that they've done. You know, what did you really get for Jake Peavy?
Good
you
point.
You know, Jake Peavy, one of the best pitchers in the National League, obviously before he hurt his arm as well. But when he got traded to Chicago or, you know, went to Chicago, what did you get for him?
Right.
Not a whole lot. You know, there were San Diego, and they were good back in the days. You know, you think of Ozzie Guillen and Gary Templeton and those kind of guys. They weren't big bombers and whatever else. They were on out and played the game the right way.
Right.
And if you don't have big bombers and you don't play in a bandbox, you have to play the game the right way.
Yeah.
And then you can bring up a whole other question today about whether today's players play the game the right way or not.
Yeah.